Excellent. An ale for me. And for my officers. In fact, ales for everyone.
Oh. Turn backwards. We can work. And we'll sometimes stammer.
Oh, yes.
Hello and welcome to Ten Backward. This is a UK-based Star Trek podcast featuring myself, Will Turland, this man, Rick Palmer.
Greetings.
This man, Rick Everson.
Hello.
And uninvited guest star, Gemma Turland.
Hello.
But you've been on enough podcasts now that maybe you're no longer uninvited.
I was going to bring that up, yes. I'm now a member of the crew.
Yeah, so.
Like the designation, uninvited.
I guess it kind of it means you don't have so much responsibility.
It does, yeah. I can nip in and out at my will.
Yeah.
So,
and if, you know, if anything bad comes of the podcast, then it's not your fault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plausible
deniability.
Exactly.
Yeah. Criminal investigations.
So we're going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery today. We started off doing a podcast on sort of covering pretty much every episode, didn't we?
We did.
But then that just sort of became unkeep upable. We couldn't maintain that.
Yeah, the nature of our schedule makes that a bit tricky to be anyway up to date.
Hmm.
I mean, there's loads of good podcasts that are doing that, literally coming out in the next couple of days. So
yeah, just listen to them.
Go listen to them, and we'll talk about it as a whole after the series is completed.
Yeah. That's it. So the last full episode we looked at was which one was it? The knife of the butcher's
the butcher's knife cares not for the lamb's cry.
I like that title better than the one they went with. So
then they had a few other titles, didn't they? Because there were a few other episodes.
Yes. Yeah. But that was the last one that we covered in depth.
Well, at this point now, we're in early 2018. It's just started up again with part two of series one, so we've seen the first episode of that. So we just thought we'd recap the first part.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe touch upon the most recent episode, because there's a few points in that are worth talking about.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I think so. What did we think of the first half of Star Trek Discovery?
As first series of a Star Trek series go, it was pretty darn awesome. When you compare it to sort of season one of a lot of the other Star Trek shows, it's a damn triumph, really, because it kept up a consistency and quality, and it was very, very. I was blown away by it.
I thought it got. I thought it kind of. It became a bit more. It seemed a bit more self-assured as it went on. Like the cast seemed to grow into their roles a bit more and. It seemed to kind of start to get its own identity by the time it reached the season break. I thought you were kind of invested in these characters now, and I think they've kind of started doing more episodes where it kind of used the ensemble cast, and it had that kind of familiar kind of beat to it of a Star Trek show. So I thought it improved as it went on. I definitely think that it was always better when the Michael Burnham character was had less of a role and other characters got a chance to be in the story, and that kind of ensemble element, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's some fantastic characters in there, I think. A lot of them are really standing up and very early on are coming to the fore and being sort of quite very interesting, very compelling characters.
Definitely, yeah. I would agree there. But I mean, early on in Disco, for example, Cadet Tilly is kind of almost just like a cheerleader for Burnham, and by the end of it, she's far more rounded and more interesting. And that should be the case because I like the Tilly character. I think there's a lot there to look to be revealed and I think by the time of the season break, that character was more rounded and definitely more of her own character rather than a character that is kind of defined by Burnham.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. When you see her get to have more to do with other characters like having to keep Stamets secret that he's having weird side effects, and her interaction with him was
Definitely.
So that's a whole extra bit. She becomes very separate, but also rather brilliant, I think.
And we find a lot more about Lorca. We get a lot more Lorca time, and I really liked a lot of his backstory stuff.
He's a fascinating one. He's he's really, really interesting and very, very keen to know where all goes Lorca.
Yeah.
He's certainly for the first half, he struck me as a very damaged captain. A man who's obviously, we discover he's lost a ship and his entire crew, potentially partially at his own hand, although he says to save them from the Klingons.
Mm.
What sort of effect that has on him? Clearly deeply troubled by it, to the point where there's an admiral feels that he's faked his way through psych tests to get back into a command position. And that's evidenced by him sleeping with her and then pulling a phaser on her in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
How many murders do you want to do? A, zero murders. B, one murder. C, two murders. D, five murders. I'll put zero murders. I'll put zero murders, but I want to do five murders.
Lorca,
you silly goose. Don't tell me. Oh, wait, am I somewhere you're going to murder? I am.
Oh, that Lorca. He's a really interesting captain. He's not like any Star Trek captain that we've had before in a series.
Definitely not.
Well, not a sort of a main character captain, I suppose.
Do you think there is a little bit of a shade of Sisko to him in that they are? I mean, definitely at the very, very beginning of DS9, the pilot episode when he's a damaged person and his colour is his decisions are coloured by that.
Yeah, I mean there's
obviously
definitely the similarities
the
in
same.
Yeah, the similarities in him being
maybe
them being damaged,
there.
I think. But
yeah, I think I see what you mean in terms of in Emissary, Sisko has come to a place and he's still defined, he doesn't even realise he's defined by a tragedy in his past.
Yeah.
And Lorca is very much like that.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Discovery is pushing the boundaries of Star Trek is that it's expanding these stories.
Mm-hmm.
What for Sisko was resolved in one pilot, and then he went on to a whole new journey through DS9. Lorca is going to have probably, well, we don't know how his story will pan out, but it could potentially be forever for him.
Mm. Yeah.
I have to admit, Lorca reminds me of almost like a dark version of Captain Picard. Like he has some kind
mirror
of
mirror universe.
He has there are things about Lorca that remind me of Picard. Like he's pretty, he keeps himself to himself. Like he's a very private person.
Mm.
And now maybe in Discovery he's been private for a reason because there's something about his character that we don't know yet.
Mm.
But there is something about him like that reminds me of like if Picard had kind of had some kind of different life and was a bit more.
He could definitely have gone that way post Borg.
Definitely,
yeah.
And maybe there's like Jason Isaacs and Patrick Stewart have slightly similar facial features, I think, and they hold themselves in a similar way. I remember myself thinking that like there's a kind of a Picardness, if that's a word, to Lorca.
Yeah.
Picard's both Picard and Lorca are a little bit sort of unapproachable.
Yes.
They're very, very much separate from the rest of the crew. You can picture yourself being great buddies with Lorca.
Mm.
No.
Whereas you could with, say, like LaForge
or
Sisko.
Thing with Sisko, Sisko has there's kind of three Siskos. There's the father. There's Father Sisko, Starfleet Sisko, and then Emissary Sisko. And
I would, I'd argue there's many more Siskos.
Bearded Sisko.
There's Dr. Sisko.
Let's save it for the Sisko podcast.
Airline
literally
fighter pilot.
Stop saying Sisko.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, good
we
point.
Gonna,
good
yeah,
point.
We are going to get into Sisko in future
one,
podcast.
One thing that was slightly frustrating is that the main Klingon bad guy, Cole, was he?
Yeah,
he was at his very best in their in one episode, and then a spoiler alert for people that might not have seen this episode so far, he'd blown up. The episode where Carly's blown up, he's at his best, I would say. It was a shame that, because that's the episode where they have that little thing where the Klingons talk in English.
Yes.
And so it's great when they talk in Klingon. It's a nice little kind of trick to have, but when he's talking, his intent is far more clear, and he's more imposing. And
maybe
he's there for longer, and he's directly involved with the main character.
Mm.
And it literally is. This is the culmination of the first half. This is the de facto battle to save the ships, to save the planet below. You know, so it's kind of in that way. I think it's probably a lot easier. Together over everything, yes, is the talk English, but I think it's probably a lot of the fact that he's right there in the action in a bigger way than he has been the rest of the series as well. But your point is that he was brilliant and he was.
Yeah.
And that was the end of part one of the series was a two parter, wasn't it, where they go to a planet.
Yes.
And it's one of those great stories where they go, this planet doesn't have any aliens on it. It's uninhabited. But it totally is inhabited. But it's just by a type of alien that they hadn't kind of factored into their search.
Unknown sort of.
I really like that kind of story.
That was definitely that. I mean, it was really nice actually to have a story that dealt with a little bit of an exploration, first contact sort of a mission. Even though that wasn't intent, that's kind of what it ended up being. And that was very good. Plus, we kind of got to get a bit into Saru's head with that as well, which was fun.
To me, that was an episode that fell flat. I don't know. I love the setup. I love the story. I love the going to a planet and the entire planet being alive with this alien being I loved all the pieces, but there was just something that didn't work for me with the whole, and I don't know.
I'd agree with you with that. I didn't care so much for that episode, and what I didn't like about that one was we got a lot of scenes with the Klingons, but they.
It was the Klingon element, wasn't it?
You didn't know who you were following. You weren't really with anyone in those scenes because you didn't get a sense of what anyone's motivations were. So those scenes just felt like a series
of things happening. Was that with Laurel and the Admiral?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
It was actually very uncertain what Laurel was really trying to do.
That was it. And
she chopped and changed a bit, and it was kind of like I came out of it feeling that she had intended to get away from that ship with Cornwell. I don't think she wanted to defect. I think that was a cover story for another sinister purpose.
Yeah.
But I think as soon as that she was in danger of being discovered, she was quite happy to turn and kill the Admiral to get out of there. So it's kind of... but then, because she then finds a bunch of comrades' bodies in the garbage room, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And so I'm not even sure she knew what her motivations were for some of that.
No.
But doesn't help. Does it? If you're showing a character as being undecided, then that's how do you, as a viewer, how are you supposed to be pulled along with that?
Yeah, it was just a little bit hard to connect to, I thought. I really like the Saru stuff. I like that we get some insight into Saru. I like that he can run super fast. And that was a nice.
He's a prey animal essentially, isn't he?
Yeah.
His species evolved along those lines. So
is he
going
to be another character that's super strong when you need that character to be super strong, but otherwise, you know, Vulcans are super strong.
Yeah. Or in a lot of the Netflix Marvel TV shows where Jessica Jones is occasionally really super strong if the plot says she needs to be.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the time
they
forget
there
that.
Who can take that?
I did always feel that. They've made such a big thing about Vulcan strength in, say, the original series, but in through the entirety of Voyager, it was never a benefit that Tuvok was able to make use of. But
Mega Strength, they call it, don't they? It's a cool name.
Save it for the Tuvok podcast. Oh, wait, we did a Tuvok podcast. We didn't touch on that.
Save it for the follow-up to the Tuvok podcast.
Tuvok.
Good.
Four
That's
buck.
Why we have you on the team, Trevor. I didn't dislike the episode, but I felt like it was the weakest one so far, and
really?
then the next episode came along, and I loved it. I loved the bitch point finale.
I wouldn't feel like it was the weakest. I take your point about it could get a little bit confusing with Laurel's shifting allegiances, but what I think with Discovery has been good is they've kept the pace up, so these things don't drag out. So actually by the next episode we're putting Laurel in, taking her from that to a completely different situation, and obviously we're where we are now, and that'll probably change in the next 2 weeks again quite radically, I should think.
And also I don't think anyone does anything too stupid in that episode, whereas in, for example, the earlier episode where Commander Landry does something stupid and gets killed, that
did irk me.
That irked me too.
It was too stupid a character. It's like, how does a character become, you know, chief of security?
Yeah.
I think
especially, and it's a show where they
stupid.
Yeah, yeah, it's a show where
does,
they set
he
up.
He does seem to employ anyone as chief of security, doesn't he?
That's true. Yeah.
I like
true.
Your spunk. You're chief
yeah.
of security.
Right, Tyler, what's your list of your CV? I see you were tortured for 6 months, but you're fine. Come on board.
Mind you, you know how
also,
he feels about psych evaluation.
Yeah, so yeah. But if you do you disagree with my answers on this test, on this psych evaluation test? And he can be my chief of security.
Interestingly, we've yet to see him take his new chief of security to his ready room where the tribble is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
know,
they do just sneak that in the corner, don't they?
Have we reached the point where we're going to talk about Tyler?
Saru's
threat ganglia
go off
yeah.
when...
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, do you know, I thought right from as soon as I saw that tribble, I did think, is there going to be a scene where that tribble... reveals
a backstory for the tribble.
That wasn't what I was
how
thinking.
Is he at Starfleet? How does it? You're the first tribble at Starfleet Academy.
Now I'm interested.
I still think it's a sign of how Lorca is so badass and just does not give a shit that he'll keep a tribble on his desk next to his bowl of fortune cookies.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't care. This tribble knows not to overpopulate my ready room. It's not going to go near the bowl. And it doesn't.
No.
That's
or maybe,
how badass Lorca
or maybe it does. He just flushes them out every...
Maybe fortune cookies are like a tribble prophylactic.
That's not a line I thought anyone was going to say in this podcast.
Also, I can never eat fortune cookies again. Also, why does Lorca never read the fortune?
Yeah, he just
maybe it's bad luck if your family made them. Like it's like a jinx or something.
Well, no, he said they used to make them.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Before the change in the world order and the different change in economy.
Mm.
So now he obviously gets them from a different source. So, you know, I'd like to see him one day just break open and read it and say, you know, don't pull a phaser on a woman you just slept with.
I'd like him break one open and go, wait a minute, there's paper in here. What the hell?
I've been eating that the whole time. That's what Dr.
Culver's
been telling me about my
digestive cookie, I get it. I thought it was just a cookie. I've been eating. I must have eaten like so much paper.
No,
and
so
fortunes.
So yeah, shall we talk about Ash Tyler?
I think we should.
The
I think, I think he's really been really interesting, and his whole storyline is one of the more interesting parts of Discovery.
So
I'm hooked.
We think he's Vok?
Yes.
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 It kind of looks pretty damn clear now, doesn't it?
I think for definite. Yeah.
I'm not going to say I'm not a fan of it because it's the story, and you know it's
you're
got
not
interesting.
A fan of it.
I'm just disappointed because it was so telegraphed. I thought they must be messing with us. I think this is a massive red herring. They're flapping in our faces, and actually, it's going to be something completely different.
But it's going to be interesting to see where he goes with that once he knows for sure that he is Vok, because obviously he doesn't feel Klingon anymore, and he's resisting the
But if the Vok personality completely comes out and resurfaces, man, that is going to be awkward for him and Burnham, isn't
yeah.
it? Oh, look, I've been smooching it up. Literally, the two people who almost hate each other in the entire series, I've been making the kisses.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So,
it's like a romantic comedy film.
my feeling is that, obviously, Vok is going to resurface, and Ash Tyler is, you know, from dialogue this time, he's been massively surgically restructured. But... Lorca did say to Tyler, he's researched him, he's checked his background, it all checks out. So we could kind of assume there was an officer called Ash Tyler. And to make sure everything's consistent, what are the chances that officer is still alive in a Klingon prison? And that they've utilised some methods to imprint a personality thing?
Why would he still be alive, though?
Well, up to the point of trying to imprint his personality, they might have had some telepathic species helping with that.
So they've had...
Yeah,
but I
like the idea that they could go and rescue the real Ash Tyler after this storyline's resolved. And then Burnham has to deal with the real Ash Tyler, who she was in love with, but then turned out to be the Klingon she hates most in the world. And oh wow, that's going to be awkward.
Oh, it's so many issues.
Drama, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I kind of.
So why you guys come to couples counselling? Wow, you wouldn't believe the luck we've had
it's
recently.
A funny story.
But yeah, from the most recent, from the episode, the first episode of the second half of the series, it seems like. Like Vok was massively surgically altered,
yeah.
And they took almost like a copy of the Ash Tyler's mind and put it on top.
That's kind of the suggestion.
So
which I think for the ultimate cover story, they needed a real Ash Tyler to exist.
Mm.
So it would suggest they did that. But it's pretty harrowing stuff. All the stuff, you know, Tyler's flashbacks, his PTSD that he seems to be experiencing, and yeah, it's pretty crazy.
But I liked that one of the tests that Dr. Culver mentioned doing was a Manchurian test.
That was a nice
nod to...
That was nice.
But you were exposed to a full set of physical scans when you came on board. And random memory sampling, the Manchurian test is highly effective at detecting what used to be called brainwashing.
Shame they forgot about that test that time that Geordi had been reprogrammed to respond by the Romulans.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Which leads us on to Dr.
Yeah.
Colder.
I mean,
I guess the last episode we've seen, he seemed to have his neck snapped by Tyler.
Yes.
But could he be okay?
No.
I mean,
no,
this is
no,
what I've been trying dead. To argue with Gemma, and she's not having it. Well, he might be all right.
You're not you.
This is the thing with me. I was devastated. I mean, I was literally done.
Yeah.
Him and Stamets are the most adorable damn couple I've
they're,
ever seen.
They're the heart of the show, I would
yes.
say.
Yes, yeah.
We
yeah.
very rarely see stable, healthy relationships depicted on
yeah.
ship in Star Trek. It's a very rare thing. So to have this couple who were there, just... being a couple, having a stable state, it was brilliant. And that adds to the fact that they're so damn adorable. Plus then, there's the very important fact, this is the first well-depicted homosexual relationship on Star Trek, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
So it's really a shame to split that up.
I agree, but also if you're going to accept that this is not abnormal in the world, then you have to then use that beautiful relationship in a dramatic way.
Yes.
Mm.
This is where we talk. I think this is where maybe we have the issue in what's happening. There's also the fact that we've had three notable deaths so far in Discovery
yeah.
of characters.
Yay, one of them's a man.
Yes, this is the first male one. Giorgio, Landry, and now Culber.
Mm.
Yeah, none of them Caucasian. We're sort
no,
of establishing a little bit of a precedent here that, you know, all the white folks are going to be fine.
That could just be coincidence, though.
I don't think that's fair to say.
Is, yeah.
I'm not accusing the writers of being deliberate.
It's,
but I do think they need to be aware that, yes, we have a very equal message on Star Trek. And as you say, then shouldn't that then translate into all the dramatic opportunities should not be... discarded for this.
But if you,
but we are sending a message out in today's society.
But those
need to be aware of.
Those characters are like in terms of who they are in the show, they're important. One's a captain, one's a security officer, one's
also
a doctor.
If
so
you're
you...
writing a story and they're being true to this, it is difficult because I mean I was upset that they these two important female characters didn't even last three episodes.
Yeah,
true. One of them obviously.
I was always, as soon as they announced Michelle Yeoh, I thought she was going to die.
There's no way she could.
Because she's like a really well-known actress.
But you do have this gut reaction to that, and oh my god! And now they're killing all the homosexual characters, which they that was a big selling point as well. But if you are going to write a story and you're going to be true to that story, you have to. And you, in a world where nobody's safe, nobody's safe, and you can't then keep a bubble around certain characters because it's political.
No,
you also stay true to the story.
Also, at least so far, it seems in this show, those characters being killed is a creative choice, whereas I think in TNG, Denise Crosby and Gates McFadden, like there was just a producer that didn't like her, right?
Yeah, she was fired because she
exactly. So at least that kind of nonsense isn't happening. And I don't know. I mean, I think it's important to have a wide range of people of different sexualities and races and genders and stuff, but you have to. I don't know. All you have to do is make sure that you give these people a rounded story and you depict them in a way that doesn't kind of mark them out because of who they are. They're just people. And
this is the important thing about Discovery: is it is a continual story. There is more to come, and I don't know how this is going to pan out, but I do know that there's probably going to be a lot of people who are very excited about their relationship who were devastated to see this one point where they finally got to see a relationship like their own on the
series. True, but I...
To see yourself mirrored in such a large...
I like Dr. Kulber because he was a good character. Him being gay didn't really matter.
But I think there will be a lot of people who are gay who it will matter because finally
I don't agree. I think
you don't agree that gay people feel represented on the show.
No, I don't think gay people will be upset. I think they
I do think a lot of them will because which is why a lot of women were upset when certain characters. I mean, Michelle Yeoh, you knew that she wasn't going to die when they started killing off female characters so quickly. When it was, this was a selling point for the show. So I do think that there is a case for a lot of gay people to be upset by, this gay couple to be decimated.
I don't think there was a
point to his death. His death will have an impact on the characters. It has an impact on the audience.
Yeah, and so, Landry's death.
But I don't think gay people would be more interested in Star Trek Discovery because it's got gay people in it.
Some would.
I think that's a bit condescending, isn't it?
Some wouldn't. People watch things for different reasons. I should imagine there already is.
The reason Landry's death was annoying is because she was an interesting character, and it was a stupid decision. It's a shame that she seemed to be being brought in as an important character, and then she was killed off. I thought that was a poor decision. But I think I'm more annoyed at the decision. I think. The actress Rekha Sharma has been in lots of stuff. Like she's a well-known actress, and I think that actress deserved better. But clearly, she knew what was going to happen. So I don't know. I feel like it's important to have a show which is inclusive and shows and depicts a wide range of characters and people. But you have to play it in such a way that. The thing, whatever it is that you might be including them in the story for, isn't overemphasized and doesn't isn't the thing that defines them. They're just yeah. characters. Yeah.
The story has to go how the story has to go, and the representation that we have had from Stamets and Culber just opens the door. There will be more relationships like that depicted on screen, and that is all a good thing.
Culber's the doctor. Like, when was? Why have they?
Well, apparently, there are other doctors because
he's not the main doctor.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's who is that? Where is that guy?
This is
there.
I really like Dr. Culber. It's a real shame he's dead.
I think we're all gutted.
Can Stamets bring him back?
Well, there we're going into.
Stamets can see the future. So maybe he can access the past and go.
And he could access another reality where.
We don't know the extent of what Stamets can do at this point, and there are. As Spock is so fond of saying.
He's not dead. There it is.
I'm in the old neck.
Oh, there's nothing worse than having your neck twisted like that. All the way around.
It's like a Chinese bloody burn right on my neck.
Oh, I'm like the bloody exorcist. Oh, that smarts. This is northern, right? When you have your neck twisted, you go northern.
I think so. Yeah,
absolutely. It's like when Firefly in the film. Is it in the film? Where he punches him in that nerve cluster. And he's like, oh, I had that moved. Maybe Dr.
He's had his spine moved. Well, you can do that kind of surgery in the future. We know because
he's got wandering spine syndrome.
Yeah. God, it was in the elbow.
That's the first time the old wandering spine syndrome has actually paid off. but I think I like that the show is sort of unexpectedly killing people off, and you do have that sense that no one's safe except perhaps Burnham.
Well,
who
knows?
Yeah, and I feel like Lorca could be killed off at some point. I don't know, but I like it adds something to the drama when you don't feel like you can. Anyone safe.
But is the simple fact that we know it's something different, but it's also Star Trek, so you're watching it thinking this is Star Trek, and then suddenly all the characters in Star Trek are dying, and that's not very Star Trek.
We're not used to it. This is a very different way of having Star Trek to have that sort of danger looming over any characters.
And also, the one thing I think is very different is that all the characters in Discovery, they're pretty cool. There's no squares. In most of the series,
going to the own recital.
TNG is full of squares. They're adorable, but you know, like
a bit of a square.
Yeah,
maybe, yeah. But you know, they're going to cool parties. And
yeah, she didn't want to go.
I Burnham's been to prison.
She was dragged there by her cool friend Tilly.
Yeah, but in most of the Star Trek shows, they are a bit kind of square, aren't they? In their interests.
Would you like?
If you go back to Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad, they do have a cool party, and it's not like a Mozart recital or anything, because that was the epitome of cool party on the Enterprise.
It's a Bee Gees remix. Break it down.
I know we're really jumping around a bit in our. Discovery discussion.
Our spore drive navigator is not really keeping
No.
Like we haven't written the notes, almost.
Almost as if.
I literally have. I spilled some water on them on the way here, but they are here and they're pretty readable.
Usually Rick forgets his notes and leaves them at home, which is kind of the only advantage that me and Rick have over being able to do talking against him. But now, he's unstoppable.
Yeah, in an act of sympathy, he's spoiled his notes with water.
Thankfully... Get a word in edgeways.
I'm putting my hand up. Is Lorca from the Mirror Universe?
I considered that.
Maybe.
He's got that wound on his back, and he's not clear about what happened to the ship.
Yeah, because I think maybe regular universe on the Buran they twigged, and that's why he destroyed it.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. I've heard the theory. I'm sort of half on board with it. I kind of like the idea that he's a regular universe Starfleet guy who's damaged, but I'm also down with the idea. that mark on his back, that scar, imaginary friend Niles was saying to me apparently that's somewhat similar to the Agonizer symbol from the Mirror Universe.
And in the most recent episode, they say that he led a coup against the Emperor. Yeah. Maybe he's more like a rebel.
And he's, what's consistent and about his character is that we know Mirror Universe characters like to do murders on other officers.
And sometimes they come through to the regular universe to get somebody to help them and stuff. There's been interplay between the universes.
The other very interesting fact that we need to consider at Lorc, and I think it lends credence, is right at the end of Into the Forest We Go, when they go to do that last jump home, he overrides it from his captain's chair.
Yeah.
People are taking
yeah.
screen grabs. You can clearly see there's a navigational override. He punches in with no clear coordinates.
And they say, did he say he'd let's go home?
He does right after he does it.
Let's go home.
The other day for research, I went through that bit and I was literally like just going over that same 10 seconds.
Because I did always get the sense that he was pushing Stamets to do one more jump.
Can we talk about that?
Just one more jump.
Can we talk about that? A lot of the interplay. We never really see a lot of interplay between Lorca and Stamets until that episode.
Yeah.
We see some, but not a lot. And then they suddenly oh yeah, actually Stamets, I'm really into exploring and alternate universes and stuff. And Stamets scientific possibilities.
Well, he shows Stamets that map of the mycelium and little points. He shows them little points where the mycelium might go into another universe, right?
And there's that point where Stamets wakes up and Lorca's there in his room whispering in his ear, alternate universes, alternate universes, alternate universes.
So
he's like, what do you do? That didn't happen.
Is Lorca genuinely a brother in loving the fuck out of science with Stamets? Or is he using Stamets' love of science to manipulate him?
Well, it could have been both. I mean, he does like science. He's got his nutty room.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Ooh, I can't wait to get myself another skull.
I still think Lorca's room of stuff that can blow shit up ought to have a big old picture of Malcolm Reed in it. But,
yeah, that'd be nice.
Maybe a little sacrificial pineapple cake every.
How did you know, sir?
it wouldn't be a 10 Backward podcast if we didn't get Rick to do that impression.
Yeah, yeah. So it's one of the key things that we pulled from watching the first season of Enterprise, that the whole pineapple cake thing. To the extent that last time we met up, I really, really searched hard to find a pineapple cake. I wasn't going to commit to making a pineapple cake because, come on. but I really did try to buy one in a supermarket and then I didn't. So it's a
real
shame.
You have to watch a lot of Star Trek to research for this podcast. So
yeah,
it gets in the way of your baking time.
That's it. Yeah, or getting good at anything else.
Anyway, the upshot is you should probably go back and listen to all our other episodes to understand the pineapple cake joke. And also because Rick's David Bowie singing the Enterprise theme tune was kind of a cool moment.
Yeah, it was good.
I might work
good,
on doing a full theme tune. I might work on a full theme tune that David Bowie would sing for Enterprise and I can then sing it. I'd do that.
That's our first big divergence from the topic of Discovery.
Yes.
this
it won't be the last.
Do you guys think that the first part of this season of Discovery is a Klingon arc, and part two will be a Mirror Universe arc?
Potentially, although the Klingon War is still kind of open.
Still going on.
And Laurel and Vok, if that is Vok, they're still in place.
Mm.
But yeah, I think essentially we've got some mirror art going on.
Yeah. I'm not sure that I feel like I'm ready to let the Klingon War go, though. I was quite enjoying the Klingon War. I wanted more war.
Is it?
But
could it be a case that...
There's plenty of war in the Mirror Universe.
Because...
Yeah, true that.
Because the genesis of Discovery, it wasn't troubled as such, but the original idea of being an anthology was, with Brian Fuller, was...
That was
how it started, but then it changed, didn't it?
I think the concept was deemed too expensive to have to keep changing sets and characters.
So do you think perhaps that they had a certain amount of material that Brian Fuller had created with this Klingon War story, and then as it changed, they brought in this other bit?
Interestingly, there was a bit of an impromptu Twitter Q&A with Ted Sullivan on on Twitter today, one of the executive producers.
He was in an airport, wasn't he?
Was indeed. Not unusual for him to be waiting for a flight and just to do a ask me anything you want Twitter. And one of the things someone said is there anything you are glad they changed around? Like, let's do X and oh, and we ended up doing Y. And he said one of the things he was glad is they moved the Mirror Universe later in the series.
Ah, okay.
So we initially apparently were going to see the Mirror Universe a lot earlier. This is all on Twitter, okay. So we don't know how.
Okay, because the episode where with the destruction of the Klingon ship, that felt like an episode you might get at the very end of a series. That felt like a finale.
It was definitely the
mid-season finale.
Yeah. I think he also touched upon the fact that they decided the way the stories had gone, that it was better to end part one there because that was a better ending, which is true because I think initially it was going to end the episode before, and I think Into the Forest Ago would have been. It's a better end or mid-season break end than it is an opener.
Yeah, I think so. Especially because I thought that previous episode was my least favourite, so I would have been bummed out over Christmas. I know. I thought the first half ended on a real high with that episode. Are you guys up for talking about what your high points and low points were?
One question?
Please.
How do people feel about the convenience of who the characters are in the Mirror Universe?
Well, I think that's consistent with every other time that we've seen the Mirror Universe. Like, it's a contrivance, that you'd... In the Mirror Universe, everyone happens to be on that same ship, and
but for Burnham, that's a good point because Burnham wouldn't have been raised on Vulcan.
No, but if she was raised on Vulcan, she would not be. Terran Empire.
So yeah, I know what you mean. Also, I don't think they'd have a ship called Discovery in the Mirror Universe. It'd be called Conquest or Stab.
Yeah.
Well, you could make Guillotine. An argument. Why do they have ships called Enterprise rather than punching or shooting
murdering.
Fair enough.
There's lots of enterprise in war.
Well,
good point.
Thank you.
There's a lot of discovery in war. Discovering the love of explosion.
It's like shooting people.
But yeah, I think that same contrivance is there in certainly. In
it's always been there. It's always been a conceit of the Mirror Universe.
Enterprise.
I agree with Rick with the Burnham character. It's a real stretch.
Well, we don't know what Mira Burnham's backstory is. She may have been raised by Mr. and Mrs. Burnham, who are particularly adept at stabbing people on Earth.
Are you from the stabbing Burnhams?
We are.
Lovely to meet you. Oh, sorry. That's how we greet each other.
Yeah, obviously, the background's out because Tilly's not a cadet. She's captain. She's Captain Killy.
I like that name is silly. and I feel compelled almost to launch into a kind of a rhyming thing about how silly Captain Killy is. But I won't.
Maybe work on that between episodes and then Rick can sing it in the style of David Bowie.
That'd be nice.
I thought she was great. I really like that. It was nice to have a fun thing. That episode was a lot of fun, I have to admit. I love the montage where they're kind of changing it from the USS to the ISS. Yeah. I thought, that's cool. That was a lot of fun. I was fully sold by that point.
It's the silliest that we've seen Discovery be, but not to its detriment. Maybe even a positive thing that it's...
The nearest, I think, was probably the Harry Mudd time loop.
Which I really loved. If we were going to talk about highlights and lowlights of the series, that was one of my highlights. I loved that episode. It was great.
Yeah, it was cool. I think Harry Mudd's in general has been a highlight of the season so far.
This episode has been fantastic.
I'm really surprised how much I've been on board with him. I think he's been really good.
Yeah.
All your fears assuaged.
Yeah.
So. Absolutely.
Because he is being portrayed as occasionally an out and out villain.
Well, he is. Basically, you've got to remember, he might have been a lovable rogue, but he was, sex trafficking.
Yeah.
He's not
a nice man.
Or the way that episode was resolved was a bit.
I was going to say
the
that
original series, wasn't it?
Yes.
But it was my problem with the way that episode was resolved. It's like, well, wait a minute, they've let him go, but he blew up the ship,
killed him
loads of times, and he you know, he's gonna
just kill him.
Yeah. Last time around, there must be some people that are dead, right?
Yeah, I was thinking that, and
I think in the final iteration, he didn't actually cause any fatalities.
Mm. Ah, okay.
Mm. It's difficult to pin murder on you when you've time looped.
Yeah,
so many
yeah.
times that you've not actually killed anyone this time when they catch
Still,
you.
Still, he did get onto a Federation ship and take it over.
It was a very original series resolution to say.
Yeah.
You can almost imagine the original Harry Mudd just going, oh, I suppose it's back to prison for me.
Oh, Captain, please.
And then
I simply
going,
murdered
no,
a
Harry,
few people to make some
you.
Money.
You're going
to
go live with your wife.
Just there with like a rolling pin in that tree. Ooh, mugging.
And then
but yeah, I did really enjoy that episode.
It was great, and it was nice because there was some key character bits coming out of that as well. And we got the Stamets crazy time immunity, whatever he's doing.
Yeah,
some little revelations about Burnham, and it was a very well done episode.
You could argue that it was. From a certain point of view, you could say it's a bit of a rip-off of, say, Cause and Effect from Next Gen, but I think it brought enough new. I think
it took a very different tone.
Yeah, but I think it took that sort of idea and did something completely different with it, and had a different sort of energy.
To
it. It was a bit of a crazy episode. It's a really fast paced.
I think particularly at the time, there were a lot of people saying, "Oh, it's just a rip-off of Cause and Effect." No, it's got the same sci-fi concept behind it.
Mm.
But that's like saying every episode with a wormhole in it is just like Emissary, whereas like Voyager's Eye of the Needle with the micro wormhole is nothing like Emissary.
Yeah.
But both got wormholes, that's a sci-fi concept they have in common.
Yeah, how else do you tell a time loop story?
Yeah, yeah. And
like Groundhog Day. Oh, it's just like Groundhog Day.
Should you
It's the same, of course it's like it.
We can't do a time loop story because they did that once before.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's 2018, pretty much every story has been told.
If they do another Dyson Sphere-based story, you can't say it's just like Relics.
Yeah.
So...
Originality is just judicious plagiarism, as Voltaire said. That's my tiny Voltaire.
Was he a Vulcan?
He was.
Yeah, I thought so.
Old John Voltaire.
Another highlight I'm going to pull out was the episode, and I have no idea how you pronounce this, which shows my poor education around ancient Greece, but is it Lethe or Leth or Leave?
I thought
Lethe.
Lethe, like latte.
Yeah, it's a. It's
Lethe sounds good.
Yeah.
It's a river in the Greek underworld where if you drink its waters, you forget everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that was an episode I thought was brilliant because we had two very good storylines going on, both the capture, also the injury of Sarek and Burnham's attempted rescue, and their crazy, like, mind meld meeting up thing.
Mm.
Which,
after
our initial reservations in the first couple episodes, I thought. That was probably the best use of the mind meld telephone.
Is that the one where we have the flashback?
Yeah, there's always that particular moment when he's basically denied her place.
Okay,
and they're doing like kung fu fights in the middle of that, which is pretty awesome.
Which sort of felt like at some point somebody said, do you know what, there's no action in this episode. What can we do? Let's have some, what if they're kung fu fighting?
Yeah.
Well, they're talking, fine.
It moves the fastest lightning. And it was a little bit frightening.
I like the fighting, so I'm not complaining.
Oh, yeah,
it's
well done.
I thought it was good.
And the reveal that Sarek had denied Michael a place in the Vulcan Science Academy to secure Spock one, which then Spock later denied and went to Starfleet, kind of puts a new spin on his whole attitude throughout the original series of his disapproval of Spock. It's centred from a very different place than we had assumed. And it's kind of a really bold move to 50 years on say, actually, the reason that character did this is because of this. And we're like, oh. Well,
I agree. I think that's good writing. I like that they did it. Yeah. But I'm not a huge fan of Burnham's Vulcan connection, if I'm perfectly honest. I think when they have episodes that explore that, it just takes up a lot of time on one character.
I don't mind it. I think it's interesting. I think she was a character who's worth sort of getting, sort of exploring a bit.
I'm very curious about the connection. I'd like to learn a lot more about it.
I'm not the biggest fan of her Spock connection. I don't mind the sort of Vulcan connection, but the Spock connection just seems like it seems like it's just a bit forced. Just so there's a connection to the original.
I think Burnham's always been at her best when that hasn't been a thing. Like when she's when it's episodes that don't have anything to do with that. I think Burnham's a perfectly good character. Would have been a perfectly good character without this Vulcan thing. I don't think it's added anything to her character. I think she's perfectly good, and she's always been most compelling when it's just the actress being Burnham
They do seem to have discarded her Vulcanness. They are doing that quite quickly, because we were discussing the other day, weren't we, Will, that there's no kind of Pinocchio character.
There's no Data. There's no Seven of Nine.
She knows how to be a real girl.
There's no
now,
kind
so
of project.
I think she thinks she does because she's getting into a relationship, but I don't.
Is Odo Pinocchio on DS9?
Yes.
Pinocchio. He's Pinocchio and he's Dogdo as well, isn't he?
He is
Dogdo,
yeah.
Saru's got a kind of a outside of humanity looking in, because he has a very different...
He is himself.
He's not trying to learn how to be more human.
No, he's quite nicely separate.
Yeah.
But I think that's a good thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Whereas all the other sort of outsider characters that we've mentioned they have a yearning to be more human, I think. Maybe Odo the least.
Yeah.
Those characters.
Yeah. Odo
you were saying.
Yeah.
Quark.
That's good.
Yeah, thanks. I'm working on
it. But the other storyline in that is Lorca and Admiral Cornwell. Which was pretty brilliant.
Yes,
we got a little bit more under Lorca's skin into his head there and find out a bit more about him, even though he was reluctant. And that was good.
Oh, there's that classic bit in a TV show which always makes me chuckle. It's when two characters they've had sex, and then there's that kind of post-coital thing, and the lady's still got a top on.
I know.
Yeah.
What kind of
just
red-blooded
like
man would allow that?
But I like to keep my bra on whilst having sex. Wearing a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. No, that is a bit of a TV trope, though, isn't it? The post-coital clothes covering particulars.
Yeah, but I like Admiral Cornwell.
Cornwell, yeah.
I think that's. But she's dead, isn't she?
No, they got her off the ship of the dead alive.
Oh yeah, of course. Sorry, yeah, I'm forgetting.
Yes.
I wasn't too sure about that either. I'm glad you said that, because I'd forgotten whether she was dead. Or
I had as well.
They had that weird thing where they kept that you thought she'd been killed, and they kept focusing on her face and focusing on her face, focusing on her face, and that with that kind of. Oh, she's going
to
open her eyes in a minute, and she
but
never
they forgot
did.
To do the bit where
she like,
ooh,
what? And
did,
that's why we don't.
Did he put that scene in where she opens her eyes?
Oh no, it's on the floor.
Also, in the Family of Discovery, editors are northern.
Yeah, yeah, that is true.
But yeah, overall, I think you're right, Rick. I think overall, considering most first seasons of shows, I think Discovery has been pretty. It's been good. It's been cracking stuff.
Yeah, I think for my money, we've had, and you might disagree with this, Rick Palmer. I think we've had three great episodes so far. I think we've had the opening two-parter. I thought was great. This is one I think you might not agree with.
I think the opening two episodes were probably my least favourite.
I think at the time you said you weren't overwhelmed or underwhelmed, you were just whelmed.
Whelmed, yes.
And I think the time loop episode I loved, and I really loved Into the Forest I Go. I thought that was brilliant. I thought it hit all the right notes.
I agree with you with those last two. Yeah, I like them a lot.
Cool. And I think to get this far into a series and have already three maybe episodes that could be regarded as classics is a great thing. And yeah. I don't think we've had any full-on stinkers.
No.
I didn't care for the kind of alien planet one. Wow, what was it called? It had a sort of a Latin title, didn't
Sic
it?
Pacem something bellum.
Yeah, yeah.
In times of peace, prepare for war, or something, or in times of war, prepare for peace.
Something like that. Yeah, but I didn't hate it. Mm. I just didn't think it was as strong as the. I thought it was the weakest.
No, I've not found an episode I haven't enjoyed.
Yeah,
and some I've enjoyed immensely. So it's been a very strong start.
Mm.
Obviously this week's was directed by Jonathan Frakes. Mm. Ooh, nice to see Commander Riker back in the fold.
And there was a mention of the USS Defiant.
Mm.
There was, and even a on-screen schematic.
That schematic, is that, does that look exactly like a Constitution class from the original series?
No.
It's slightly different.
It is. If you see the nacelles are angled out and then upwards, and there's like some sort of tube attachments at that point where they angle. There's also seem to be some wedge parts out of the saucer.
Okay.
However, again on Twitter today, Ted Sullivan confirmed that these are Terran Empire modifications and refits, because you have to remember the Defiant has been in the Mirror Universe for over 100 years.
Yeah, yeah, and it was, last time we saw it was the Empress's flagship, right?
It was.
So maybe it still is. Mm. So
I was very pleased about that, because it's like still opens the thing that we might see a fully fully original style Constitution class.
I think, I'm wondering if that's the palace that Stamets is referring to.
Yeah.
Oh, who do we think the Emperor is?
Oh, please, can it be Michelle Yeoh?
Please, yes.
I'm so hoping.
Wait a minute, Jackie Chan.
someone Oriental, for God's sake. Because the last time I saw the Empress, she was, because they're all the same, right?
When Michelle Yeoh was announced, the first thing Will said to me was, if Michelle Yeoh's in it, she's friends with Jackie Chan, maybe she'll get him in it too.
Yeah.
Oh, Jackie Chan's friends with Owen Wilson. How cool would that be?
No,
let's just stop at Jackie Chan.
And Steve Coogan was in. He was in 80 Days.
And Chris Tucker.
Imagine them all in the, being the, like the royal court and the. No, that is ridiculous. Some of them would be too expensive, I think.
I think Michelle Yeoh is a good shout for it.
I think it'd be great.
Emotional impact for Burnham wise, that's why I'm 95% certain it will be Georgia.
And imagine if there's a scenario where she ends up having to kill Georgia again, but this time it's they're properly against each other, and I would like that.
We're definitely going to find out. They've mentioned the Emperor way too many times in one episode. Not to then go and find out who they are.
Unless we're just. We're getting too much nerd excitement about a sort of throwaway line.
Well, they do seem to be. They're on the, now that they're on the Shenzhou. Now Burnham's captaining the Mirror One. The next thing is to go to the Defiant, isn't it?
Yeah,
get aboard there and work out how it got through to the Mirror Universe and the Prime Universe. But that could be an amazing episode.
I'm really excited to see where it's going to go.
Yes.
And I'm glad we're in a position where that's the case, and we're not just moaning about.
No, I think there's a lot of good stuff to be said for.
Yeah.
And you know, it's going to get stronger. I think the series is just going to get better as we're going.
Well, I suppose if you look back in through all the other Star Trek TV shows, none of the other TV shows first season has been its strongest, except for original series, I guess.
Mm.
So let's hope season two could be even better.
Yeah, normally season three is the point where it really kicks into high gear for a series. So
yeah,
it could be a very exciting time.
I guess it depends what they want to do with it, what ideas they have for it going forward.
I've seen people start saying maybe Discovery will never get back to its own universe. Maybe it'll be like a Quantum Leap or Sliders thing.
I heard that idea.
Jumping universe to universe.
Which I'm not against that idea, because it'd be something we've not really seen in Star Trek before. But at the same time, it'd feel odd that we'd had all the Klingon stuff set in the Prime universe, and then we'd move on. So, if that was going to be the idea, I think that would have been the idea from the get go.
Although the fact that you now have what's What's the next one? The fact that you now have what's her name? The Klingon.
Laurel.
Laurel.
Yeah.
And Ash on the same ship, so they are together in the Mirror Universe. Could be.
And he's murdered someone, which is going to be found out. So
they might escape at some point, and then that could sort of carry on the Klingon story in that way.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe we're going to see Mirror Laurel and Mirror Vok, and they're a bit.
They'll be sort of leaders in the resistance movement on that side. Who knows? It's cool to be speculating about.
That's one of the nicest things. That Tuesday morning you go to work or something and you start having these conversations about, oh my God, what happened? What's going to happen next week?
It's been
a long time since that's happened.
Yeah, it has.
I'm not going to get tired of that feeling for a while.
And I never really had that feeling with Enterprise. I think because when Enterprise was on, we were maybe a bit oversaturated with Star Trek, and so I think Voyager was still running at the start of Enterprise, wasn't it?
No, it just finished.
But I think when Enterprise was airing, I'd maybe grown a little weary of Star Trek, whereas now
I think Enterprise things suffered.
Going on,
I think franchise fatigue was literally the issue with Enterprise, because you go back now, as we did when we did a Series 1 retrospective. There's some cracking stuff there.
Definitely,
if you really look through Enterprise, it's not bad. It's not a terrible series. There's a lot of great stuff in it. So
it's just a bit hard to kind of continually
churn out
ideas.
Star Trek for many years, and maybe Enterprise wasn't different enough. If it had been radically different, that's not to say it's bad. It's great, because now we go back and look at it and love it. But at that point, we were ready for something new, and Enterprise wasn't new enough. It was an attempt, but it wasn't a big enough attempt. But then, I don't know, maybe if it had gone on from the start as it did in Series 4, we'd be talking about how great all those 7 series of Enterprise and 3 movies were.
Yeah, that's it. Maybe it'd be still running. We'd be like, oh, talking about Season 19 of Enterprise. which would be a kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
So I think that feels like that's brought us to a bit of a logical conclusion. Let's close this one up and refresh our drinks, and then come back to do some more recording, I think.
Excellent.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next time.
Yes, but it's been a pleasure. Cheerio.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Do you realise how incredible this is?
It's tradition.
You ever noticed her bum?
What?
That bum.
Oh no!
Enough of this self-indulgence.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, our website is www.lowerdecksradio.co.uk. You can reach us on the Twitters at 10backward, 10 being the number and backward being the word backward. We're also on Facebook at www.facebook.com/10backwardpodcast. You can also email us at crew@lowerdecksradio.co.uk. On a personal, individual level, my Twitter is at Will Turland. Rick Everson's Twitter is at TrekFanRick. And Rick Palmer's Twitter is at Mr. Imhotep. Thanks again for listening, and please tune in for more podcasts from the 10 Backward crew.
Let's make sure history never forgets the name.
10 Backward?
Buddy. Don't you think you should rephrase that?
10 backward. 10 backward.
My father was a gourmet chef. I will make for you his famous aubergine stew.